bid for it, you know. Well, I always consider all those choices. Welcome to America. The land of too many choices.
There you go.
Good old Nathan's.
Did you divide the house, folks?
Mm-hmm.
It's
tough. So now we went up there. We can't think of different places. Because general over the area, like that's not that very long. That's a lot of.
He quotes from the point of view.
Did you guys even go there at all?
I don't know if they did.
I don't know if they made it down there.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You
read?
Yeah, you ready?
Yeah, let's roll.
Can you shut the door?
Yes, please.
I'm CW, I'm sex addict. Paraphrasing from the forward.
CW, I hate to interrupt. Can we start with prayer?
Yeah, that's right. I've got to start with the top line. May we open this meeting with a moment of silent prayer, each in their own way, followed by a serenity prayer. Recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Show other alcoholics and sex addicts precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book and of this group. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the addict. Many do not comprehend that an addict is a very sick person, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. Now we're going to jump to membership. Membership in Sex Addicts Anonymous and in this group is limited to those who have compulsive, obsessive, and destructive sexual behaviors and have a desire to stop these behaviors for good and all. There are a number of other fellowships that deal with problems other than sex addiction. We would be happy to try to help you find one that will meet your needs. The primary purpose group of FAA Dallas observes the CHIP system and would like to recognize those who have reached certain milestones in their pursuit of sobriety. Anyone celebrating 1, 2, 3, 6, 9, or 9 months, or a year or more sobriety. All right. All good?
I would love
to
April 1st.
All right.
Like last week, we got a lot of ground to cover.
We should have done looked at step three. The homework assignment was to read chapters 5, 6, and 7 and ask yourself, is there anything here I would be unwilling to do? And then also the assignment was to define sobriety using some particular highlights from the big book as our guide. Okay, so let's see. John, would you turn to page 63, second paragraph, and read for us the third step prayer.
God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me, and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those thou help, with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, and do thy will always.
Okay. There's, I guess you may have noticed that there's no amen at the end of that prayer. Reason is, there's actually not an amen until the seventh step prayer. It's further on in the book. But anyway, the reason is that everything between here and the seventh step is meant to be prayerful action. Every act I do between here and there is supposed to be an act of prayer. Okay? We, at this point, are relying upon the grace of God to keep us sober. And that means that we don't doubt it. We don't take our time with this. We boogie. We get to work right away, and we work up a sweat habit. Okay? It means there's no hanging around, no goofing off, no waiting to see how this feels, but get into it. Okay? All right. Let's see. At the end of it, it's funny. It says at the end, after the prayer, it says, we think well before taking this step. And what this means is, guys, is you gotta be really sure you want to do this. Because this is no picnic. This is no fun. Those of us who've been there know that it's self-examination is not a lot of fun. Okay? Making amends is not a lot of fun. But its rewards are pretty darn good. You know, when we ask God to relieve us of the bondage of self, what we're doing is since he can't remove our self-will, what he does, when I say God's leading me in the bondage of self, he sees me exerting my self-will on my marriage. He says, okay, Ken, you know, I'm going to remove your marriage so that you don't have to exert self-bondage anymore. Next thing I know, my wife has packed her bag and she's left. I'm exerting self-will at work. And God says, well, Ken, you know, you're exerting self-will, you're being selfish at work. I'm going to take away that work thing so that you don't have to exert yourself on that anymore. Next thing I walk in, I'm being laid off. Okay? So we thought well before taking this step. Okay? We have to be careful. We have to understand that when we ask God to do something, he does it. It just doesn't always look the way we want it to. Okay? Understand that when we go into this recovery, we don't go in saying, well, we have a tendency to go in saying, God fix me, but fix me in this way. Fix me like this. But God says, I'm going to fix you because you asked me to fix you, but guess what? It ain't going to look anything like what you want it to look like. Okay. When we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, we have to understand what that means. Turn to page 53. It says, right in the middle of the page, that you know God is either everything or else he's nothing. And if I'm pushing myself and trying to control this part of my life, I'm saying God is everything except this. But wait a minute. Our choice was God is everything or else he is nothing. If he's not this, then I'm saying he's nothing. But what I have to remember is that I can't exert my self-will on this. Because that's me denying God. God is everything. So God is even this that I'm having trouble with and so on. Look, it's like I'm in the worst bar in the world. I could get shot or stabbed at any moment. Okay? And I am sitting in the very back of the bar at a table with my back to the door. Okay? Right across the table from me is God. Between my back and the door is the entire bar and all that stuff going on that's really scary. Okay? But God's saying every time I start to look over my shoulder, he's saying, no, Ken, don't worry about that. I've got that covered. You do this right here in front of me. You do what I've given you to do. I've got that. I've got your back. I'll take care of that. And so anytime I hear, you know, I start worrying about my marriage, and I look over my shoulder to worry about my marriage, God's saying, no. Ken, don't worry about that. I got it taken care of. You do this work. Nothing else. Okay? So, that being said, CW, page 63, the last sentence. Next.
Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, first step of which was the personal house cleaning. Many of us had never attempted.
Okay. What does next mean? You're standing in line at a bank, and the teller says, next. Does that mean I wait? No, it means I step up to the teller, right? Okay? Launch, what does that sound like? Does that sound like I kind of, you know, doubted about? No. Launched. Vigorous action, right? I'm not going to do it slowly, right? All right, action. And that, this is a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is the fourth step. The course is the rest of the steps. But the first step of this course is the fourth step. Okay? We realized in step three that a life run on self-control based on self is not a success. Everybody tries to do it. And we have to understand that life is not going out of control. It's just out of my control. Okay? Understand that though I try to exert my will on this, that, and the other thing, I have to make peace with the fact that I'm not God. Okay? I don't have control over the outcome of things. I think I can exert my will and tweak things over here, try a little plan there, hopefully it'll come out the way I want, but it never does. Well, it's just proof I'm not in control. I don't control any of this. Meteor could crash in this building right now. Can't predict that. Flood could come. I can't predict that. None of this is within my control. I cannot predict the outcome of the next 5 minutes. Okay. So, but that's the problem. That's what I've been doing for most of my life. The thing is, when I try to control all this, and I'm trying to predict the outcomes, and I'm trying to figure out how to make this life work the way I want it to work, what kind of power do I think I have? I'm playing God again. Right? I don't have control over any of that, but when I think I do, I'm playing God. Here's the whole problem. You know, when I think I'm in control, I'm saying I'm God. Well, how can I get to know God better if I think I'm God? Well, I can't. If I'm God, then God doesn't exist, right? God is nothing if I'm God. But wait, we made a choice. God is everything. Okay? All right. Let's see. Adrian, would you turn to page 64, the third paragraph down, the fourth sentence.
When the spiritual mountain is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically.
Look, this is, you know, it says that selfishness and self-centeredness is the heart of our problem. Okay, that's what's really keeping us sick. When I straighten that stuff out, then my mental illness regarding my sex addiction is going to straighten out. My physical body will straighten out as a result of that. Okay? So what I got to do is I got to get this spiritual life back on track through working these steps. If I do that, the spiritual malady gets under control, then this obsession leaves me and everything's cool, right? As long, well, we'll get into that. I don't want to get ahead of us. I have a tendency to do that. Let's see. CW, turn to page 64, second paragraph, fourth sentence, being convinced.
Being convinced itself, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered it a common manifestation.
Okay. Let's see.
This is the purpose of step 4 and 5, is that we're supposed to be looking for how I continue to play God, okay? This is why we do step 4 and 5. How I continue to exert self-will on this outside world, try to manipulate and control things, how to tweak it here and tweak it there so that it comes out the way I want it to. And of course, it never does, and I end up frustrated and end up backing out as a result. Okay, let's see. You know, these are the things that block me off from God. These are the things that stand between me and God. I have to identify them first. I have to figure out how it is that I'm being blocked from God. Okay. So, John, page 64, first paragraph, fourth sentence in, taking.
Taking commercial inventory of the fact-finding and fact-facing process.
Okay, what is our fourth step? We made a fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves, okay? Fearless means fact-facing. Searching means fact-finding, okay? There's three inventories that we take. There's the resentment inventory, the fear inventory, and the sex and other harms inventory. Okay, there are several things that this fourth step does not say. If you, is it page 59 has a fourth step on it? If it has the steps on it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right, looking at that, looking at just step four, do you see the word complete in there?
No.
Okay, all right, do you see the word thorough?
No.
No, that's not in there either. Perfect. Perfect?
No.
No. Okay. All right, let's continue there.
Okay. He's got the fifth edition. All right.
You have the fifth edition. Okay.
I don't mind.
Okay. Okay. Do you see the word immoral?
No.
Okay. Let's see. John, do you see the word laundry list in there? Okay. All right. So this is not complete. It is not thorough. It is not perfect. It is not an immoral inventory. It is not a laundry list. This is a fact-facing, fact-finding process. All I'm trying to do is figure out how I try to play God in my own life. We established that, you know, this is the how and why of it. We had to stop playing God ourselves. It didn't work. Okay? That's what's keeping us miserable. All right. So, we're looking at resentment. Resentment is our first inventory. CW, page 64, third paragraph, sentences 5 and 6, starting with in dealing.
In dealing with resentment, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry.
Okay, that is the first column, column 1. We listed persons. That's like real persons. My mom, my dad, my boss, etc. Right? Institutions. That's like the police department. Oh, yeah. Why don't you pass those out, Adrian? Thank you. These are Joe McHugh's inventory forms. Many of you have seen them before. Some of you haven't. This will be helpful. Yeah, police institutions are police departments, legal systems, banks,
airlines.
As he hands one to CW.
Churches,
yeah, you know, institutions.
IRS.
Yeah, there you go. God,
I stayed on yesterday.
Okay. All right. principles are like laws or rules or things that are just facts of life. You know, the fact that people get sick and die. That's a principle you can be resentful of. Okay? Everybody clear on that? That's simply column one. All right. We do one column at a time. We go from top to bottom, and then from left to right. We do the first column, then we go to the second column, do that column completely, then we go to the third column, do that column completely, etc., etc. Okay. So, let's see. Adrian, page 64, third paragraph, pick up where CW left off.
The answer follows whatever is in there.
Okay. This is the second column. It's the hinge pin of the inventory. For every reason that I'm angry, I need a separate line of inventory. If I finish column one and Dad's right up there at the top, which for most of us he is, then I get up in that second column at the top and I realize I've got five different reasons I'm angry at Dad. Then I go back down to the bottom of the list. I write down the first reason at the top, and I add Dad's name one more time to the bottom, and I put out each reason. Each reason deserves its own line of inventory. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody?
No.
Okay. All right. Let's see. CW, would you pick up right there where Adrian left off and read all the way through to the next page?
In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambition, and our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up.
Go ahead and read, I think, the end of that paragraph.
On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with?
Okay, yep, that's it. Okay, that's column three. That's a three-column inventory. You can see the example of the three columns there on page 65, and it's pretty simple. Look, self is the question in our resentments is how is self affected? Okay, and we'll get into this whole definitions of self thing in just a bit. Let's see. Go ahead and pick up there on page 65 down at the bottom, the third paragraph. Four sentences in, all the way through to the next page, the end of that paragraph from the first thing, and then ending with short-lived.
Go ahead. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world had its people, and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
Okay, look, if we just do a three-column inventory, we're stuck in victimhood. Yes?
I had a question. It says, nothing counts but thoroughness and honesty, but when you started saying that wasn't part of the stuff.
Yes, you're right. And I'm glad you clarified that, because that is something I forgot. Well, when we want to do this inventory, we need to talk about who we want on this list, okay? Resentment means I keep feeling it over and over and over and over again. I use these two examples whenever I work with somebody. The guy who, the school bully, who in the seventh grade spat on me, he outweighed me by about 50 pounds. Except as an example of who not to put on my inventory, I haven't thought of that guy in 30 years. Okay? He does not affect my life. I do not rethink of him over and over and over again and keep trying to work out that problem in my head. He doesn't belong in this inventory. Okay? The guy who molested me about the same time in my life, who I reacted by acting out with all these women because I wanted to prove I was not homosexual, that guy belongs on my inventory because he affected pretty much most of my life, certainly my acting out, okay? He belongs on my inventory. So, when I work with somebody, I tell them, look, you're going to do this inventory. We don't need a huge long laundry list, okay? What we need is what's bothering you, okay? So take 20 minutes on that first column. Write down all you can think of in 20 minutes, okay? And then move on. We're going to be doing inventory for the rest of our lives. You think of somebody else, you run into that guy who spat on you in the seventh grade, and you suddenly, the resentment pops up, great, we can do inventory then too, okay? But we need freedom from the stuff that's keeping us chained right now, okay? It happens. We run into those people and suddenly the resentment flares and, hey, this is a chance for me to identify something else that stands between me and my Creator, period. But right now, let's learn a quick method for learning how to do inventory so that when those things pop up, I can address that problem immediately, learn where I'm selfish, and be free of it. Okay? So let's not do a long, drawn-out, thorough, perfect list. Okay? Because you're always going to forget something. Mm-hmm. Let's not worry about that. Let's not worry about what God is going to show us through this unless to us not being perfect with it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Alright? Let's just get through it. Let's get a model for how to live life. Okay? That's what these 12-step rooms are supposed to be about. My sponsor always taught me, look, this should be Life 101. This is trade school for life. We never learned it before. We got to learn it now. Okay? All right. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. And I think that also addresses the third column stuff, right? The thoroughness?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're looking at how this affected us. We need to look at what all this affects us. And there's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. Because... Well, we'll get into that. And that may be our next session because this is something that really ought to be addressed in the fifth step mm-hmm. or after the fifth step, okay? All right. So we get into, if we stay stuck in that, and that's what that previous thing that the CW read was about, was that as long as we just do three columns, we stay a victim. We remain a victim. We are only looking at the way what they did affected us, okay? Well, that's not freedom. We're still stuck in the same place. Unless we can move beyond that. But, in order to do that, let's look at a few things. We have some self-definitions that Adrian also handed out. Self-esteem, I like to put this in terms of early man, you know? As members of a tribe, early nomadic peoples, you know, we had to see it related to our value to the tribe. Nowadays, that translates into a support circle, support group, support our friends, our family, the people around us, the people close to us, okay? What is my value to these people? That's my self-esteem, okay? My personal relationships, that's my relationship with each of these people, okay? It's pretty self-explanatory, right? Material security, that's a roof over my head, the clothes on my back, the food in my fridge, and my ability to provide all that, right? It's my physical health, okay? Let's see. My emotional security, this is about the stability of my support circle. And it may have nothing to do with me. You know, let's think about it in terms of early nomadic peoples, you know, a tribe. If there's a sickness in the tribe, it's got nothing to do with me. But I could be resentful with the fact that that people get sick and die, and it throws off the stability of my tribe. I may be stuck in fear. Am I going to have a tribe tomorrow, or am I going to be left alone to hunt and gather by myself? You know, is somebody going to be able to watch my back while I'm sleeping tonight and make sure the big saber-tooth tiger doesn't come and kill me? You know, if everybody's sick, who's going to do that? Okay, that's the overall stability of my tribe. Okay, the overall stability of my support system. Are the major leaders in my support system, are they conflicting with each other and talking about splitting the tribe up? If so, that's a problem with the stability of my tribe, isn't it? But it's got nothing to do with me. Okay? It's just emotional security. It's about the stability in my life and my support system.
Okay. Sex relations.
This is about my overall relationship with my significant other. Yes, sex is a part of it, but it is the most unimportant part. Okay? It is a part of it, it is important, but of the parts of my overall relationship with my significant other, it's inconsequential. I find that when everything else works out, that works out too. Okay? If I'm working on the intimacy with my wife and she and I are connected, then the sex thing takes care of itself. I straighten out spiritually. I straighten out mentally and bodily too. Okay? Alright.
Hidden sex relations. This is my obedience to the biology that God programmed me with.
You know, I am programmed to notice certain things. God made me in a certain way so that I would notice certain things in a woman. It's just natural. Okay? It's not anything to be ashamed of, but you know, in our case, this is our addiction. This is what I do. This is how I get high. So, one of our friends here in this room likes to call it the duh column. Everything before I get sober affects this column. Because everything before I get sober is a reason to go act out in my disease. Okay? So pretty much everything. Just check right on down there, you know?
Duh. Okay.
My ambitions is just my future goals for each one of these instincts. Okay? It's my vision of how this should look in the future. Okay? And each one of these instincts has its own ambition.
Alright. The example on page 65 only shows three columns. However, if you turn to page 67, Adrian, since you're there, second paragraph, read that whole paragraph. Referring
to our loves to them, putting out our minds wrong with others to them. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. Wherein we've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Though a situation that has been not been entirely our fault, we try to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where are we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and we're willing to set these matters straight.
Okay, that's the hidden fourth column. Okay, we talked about the three columns, but now this is where we're going to find freedom. This is the most important column. Does anybody know why? It's because it's the only column we can affect. It's the most important column because it's the only thing I have any control over. The rest of it, I have no control over whatever. That fourth column is the most important column.
And look, this...
this is the goal of our inventory, you know, to find these character defects. And all character defects, and I know you'll go to the seven deadly sins, and you'll go to this thing, complicated all over, but it all boils down to these five. Selfishness, inconsideration, dishonesty, self-seeking, and fear. All those other character defects that we talk about in all these other lists are a combination of those five, if not purely one of those five. Okay? And even some of those five are a combination of a couple of the others. Self-seeking is a combination of selfishness and dishonesty about motives. And we'll get into that. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Courage, do we find inconsiderate?
Inconsiderate.
Yeah.
It's not on that list, but I'm about to take you there. That was the very next thing. Page 65. Six, the fourth paragraph, that should be right down at the bottom.
Go ahead, Adrian.
We turn back to the Lord for a call to keep the future.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
No.
If we were to live.
Let's see.
No.
I'm sorry.
68?
Yes, that's it. Would you read that for me, Jason? Loudly, please.
This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick.
Go ahead and read the rest of that paragraph.
Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done."
Okay. And by the way, that's the third step, resentment prayer. Okay. That's in consideration. There are many things in here, you know, that's in the very least, if we've got one character defect that we can always fall back on in this, it's that one. You know, we're failing to show some compassion for a person who's suffering from a spiritual malady as well. Selfishness. Okay? You think, hey, your selfishness is making you miserable. What do you think it's doing for them? Right? Okay. And, you know, going back to page 65, we're looking at this example. I want to be clear on this. When we're doing this inventory, it does not have to be a long, drawn-out, complicated process. How many words in the longest description in his column 2, how many words does he use? 12, 13?
Three.
No, the longest description?
In column 3?
In the second column, I'm sorry.
Oh, in the second column.
Yeah, no more than 15 words. You know, my friend Myers likes to say, look, this is a business inventory. Milk, bad. Okay? Bread, moldy. Okay? Does it make sense? This doesn't have to be complicated. You know, he gives this great example. You don't have to go into, well, you know, well, it started that day when the delivery man was late. Well, we don't have to go into that. Look, the milk's bad. Get rid of it. The bread's moldy. We need new bread. We can't sell moldy bread. Right? It's just simple. It's really simple. Why am I resentful of Dad? He ignored me. It's that simple. Okay? Why am I resentful with that guy that molested me? Because he molested me. Okay?
It's simple, but it's also specific and to the point.
Exactly.
Can't oversimplify it by saying, "Why am I angry at Dad? Because he's an asshole."
Right.
That's
it has to be specific. You're exactly right. What does asshole mean? That's a judgment statement. And you know, across the room, there could be 1,000 different reasons to be an asshole. Pardon our language. It's just being recorded by you know, but that's a generalization that we need to be specific about it. Because he was a not nice person, because he ignored me. That sorry, rotten, dirty son of a gun. Right? Okay. All right. Let's see. Resentment. Let's talk about this resentment thing. It's about the past. Okay? It's about what someone did to me. And the way it usually affects me is that something in column 3, something about me was affected. Okay? So that's the question of the resentments in column 3, is what about self was affected? And usually it means something was given to me that I didn't want, or something was taken from me that I did want. Okay? Alright? I wanted that, you took it from me, I'm resentful at you. I didn't want that, and you gave it to me anyway, and now I'm resentful. Okay? Does that all make sense? Everybody cool on that? Alright, fear. Fear is about the future.
It's about what's being threatened in the third column. So the question is, what about self is being threatened? And it's about the potential of someone taking something from me that I want, or the potential of somebody giving something to me that I don't want. It's about the future. It's about things that haven't happened yet. Right? Okay. Column one is, what is the fear? Identify it. Write it down. Column two, why do I have the fear? Column three, how was self threatened? And column four, what is my part? Okay, so CW, page 68, the first paragraph, starting with sentence four and ending with the second paragraph, sentence four, wasn't it because, and then end it with the role he assigns.
Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Where do you want to start? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there's a better way, we think so. However, we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigned.
There you go.
Just to the extent that we do.
That's enough. Yeah. Thanks. That's the essence of it. We've been talking about, I've been trying to arrange life, but it never seems to turn out the way I want, right? That's why I'm fearful. I'm afraid it's not going to turn out the way I want. Well, it never has. What do I expect? Good grief. Because self-reliance failed me. Right? But another way to turn it around, isn't it because I'm failing to rely upon God instead? Okay? Well, now we're on a different basis. Okay? So, if God is everything, then fear is no longer a problem. Okay? And then say it's gone. I mean, it talks about this in just a few more sentences. Let's see. Adrian, same page, 68, the third paragraph, sentence 4, the verdict.
The verdict of the Jason brings up faith means courage.
There you go. The opposite of fear is not necessarily courage, but faith. It doesn't mean the absence of fear either. You can't have courage or faith without fear. What you have is insanity. If you weren't afraid, you'd be nuts. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. Well, CW, right there, page 68, the third paragraph, sentence 5 to the end of the paragraph. We ask God. Go ahead.
We ask Him to remove our fear.
Yeah.
And direct our attention to what He would have us to be.
Okay. Look, this is a prayer. It's a two-part prayer. We don't just ask Him to remove our fear. We ask Him to direct our attention to what He would have us be. Okay? It's not a complete prayer without both parts. God does not take away our character defects without providing us with a character asset to replace it. Okay? All right. Adrian, pick up right there and go ahead and read I think the rest of that paragraph.
At once we can move stop for our fear.
Okay. What does that mean? It doesn't say that the fear is gone.
Yeah, it means in a century, right?
Pardon?
It doesn't mean in a century either.
No. It means at once, it means right now, we commence to outgrow fear. The fear is no longer bigger than us.
You know, in our disease, the fear drove our decisions. The fear is what made us do what we did. It's what motivated us to make those bad decisions based on our own selfishness. But see, now, since God is everything, the fear diminishes. It's still there, but it doesn't have to drive our decisions. Now, we can recognize it, and we can recognize that this is a place for us to exert faith instead of fear. Okay? The fear doesn't have to drive us anymore. It doesn't have to be what motivates us to be what we are. Now faith motivates us to be what God would have us be. Okay?
Let's see. CW, I want you to turn to page 14. This is a program warning. Down the last sentence on that page.
Where an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead.
Okay, look, this is what a lot of our fear is based on, right? The trials and low spots ahead of us, right? Well, this book tells us, it promises, there will be trials and low spots. There's no avoiding it. But if you're going to survive them, you better follow the dictates of a higher power. Okay? You know, that's a warning. So, guess what? You got every reason to be afraid. There's going to be trials and low spots in your life. There's no controlling life so that you can avoid discomfort. We were having that discussion before the meeting. What are we hallucinating? We think we can be comfortable for the rest of our lives? Life's full of tragedy. It's full of some hard, terrible stuff. There's no avoiding it. That pain, we can grow from that pain. That's what we're after here, spiritual growth. Okay. So the program instructions, Adrian, skip way ahead to page 133, paragraph 0. Last couple of sentences of that paragraph.
Mm-hmm. Every child describes his belief that this life is a vale of tears. So it once was just that for many of us. But it is clear that we made our own misery. God didn't do it. Avoid then the deliberate manufacture of misery. But if trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize on it as an opportunity to demonstrate his omnipotence.
Okay, so it's telling us exactly what we need to do when these trials and low spots happen. Capitalize it on it as a demonstration to show what God can do through us. Okay.
We are sure God wants to
You know, okay, we're going to couple that. Go to page 100, paragraph, the first paragraph, first full paragraph on that page.
Mm-hmm.
Read it loud. This is a promise.
It is dependent upon his relationship, or do you want me to start with both of you?
Both you.
Both you and the new man must walk day by day on the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
What's that last part again?
No matter what your present circumstances.
No matter what your present circumstances, right?
Explanation point.
Explanation point!
That's right.
It's important.
It must be important.
So it doesn't matter if these trials and low spots come.
Mm-hmm.
You can live in a new and wonderful world anyway. Clarence Snyder is a perfect example of that. The first 2 years of his sobriety, he lived in out of the back of his car. He slept in the back seat of his car. All of his stuff was in the trunk of his car. He was homeless, but he was sober and happy. Okay. All right, John. Do me a favor, turn back to page 68, second paragraph, the fifth sentence, should be down at the end of that paragraph.
Just the extent that we do as we think he would have us and help me rely on him, does he enable us to match clamoring with serenity?
Okay, that's also a promise. Calamity's going to come. We can match it with serenity just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and we humbly rely on Him. That's another promise. Okay, so you're right to be afraid. There's going to be stuff that's going to happen in our lives that we can't predict, and it's not going to be comfortable. It's going to be downright unpleasant. Adrian?
Yeah, I think it's just absurd that we'll have serenity in our life if we surrender to God. Just as sure as we'll act out eventually if we don't.
Bingo. Bingo. That's the absolute truth. Okay. So does everybody cool on this fear inventory thing? Mm-hmm. Everybody understands it's our own motivations that keep us afraid? Okay. Sex and other harms. Look, the reason we couple sex as a harms inventory is because we're sex addicts. We don't know a darn thing about healthy sex, okay? Pretty much guaranteed that everyone that we've been in contact with in some way that we've been interested in sexually, we have harmed them in some way, okay? We've learned from the exercise to define our sobriety that it's about selflessness and not. It's about selflessness and not selfishness, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about what I can get out of it. It's about what I can bring to it. If it's not a physical expression of an already existing intimacy, we probably harm the other person. Okay? So, sex and other harms. Of course, this is page 69. Column 1 on your inventory sheets is, who have I harmed? How have I harmed them? How was self out of balance? Out of balance. That's the third column. Okay? So, in resentment is how was self affected. In fears, how was self threatened. In harms and sex, it's how was self out of balance. It flows the exact, though we write it in the same direction as a resentment inventory, it flows in the opposite direction as a resentment inventory. So, in the resentment inventory, it's what that person did to me and how I was selfish. In a harms inventory, it's how I was selfish because self was not going the way I wanted it to, and I did this to fix it, and it harmed this person. Okay? It flows the exact opposite direction. In resentment, they harmed me. In the harms, I harmed them. Self is on the right, resentment is on the left, or the person we harm is on the left. The other person involved is on the left. Okay. Does everybody understand that? It's like this. If I had a son who wanted to go to college, and he asked me to help him, and I had the money to do it, but I didn't because I wanted to hold on to that money for my retirement or whatever, or some retreat house I wanted to build out in the woods or something. Self is out of balance. You know, my material security, my security ambitions, they're out of balance, right? Because I'm holding on to all that material goods and depriving my son of his education, right? At the same time, he comes to me and asks me to help him with college, and I don't got the money, yet I'm going out to eat with my wife every week, some expensive restaurant. We've got a big screen TV. We've got no savings in the bank. Guess what? Self is out of balance again. Same places, just the opposite direction. Okay, does that make sense? Adrian?
So do I still work this left to right?
Yes, we work it left to right. But understand that the goal is to find that fourth column. But in the harms inventory, we start with the result. Okay? In the resentment inventory, we start with the other person. Okay? We start with the beginning. Does that make sense? Okay.
So time-wise, it flows the other direction, but when we're writing inventory, it flows the same direction. Okay? All right. Let's see. Character defects. Let's talk about that for a little bit. Selfishness.
Of course, obvious. You know, it's focused on me, what I want, and so on and so forth. Guys, it's pretty obvious. When I hear myself saying I want or I don't want, I'm being selfish. If God's going to take care of all my needs, and we have, that's a promise of this book, as long as we keep close to Him and do His work well, He's going to take care of everything we need, then what do I have to worry about anything else? Everything else is what I want. That's me being selfish. Okay?
And consideration. That's me acting without thinking.
That's me doing without taking, you know, stopping, bringing God into the situation, thinking about what the ramifications are and what God would have me do. That's in consideration.
Okay, self-seeking. Now, this is the complicated stuff. This is how I advance myself in life. This is how my motivation is to get ahead. Okay? And most of the time, it's how I try to get ahead in other people's opinion of me. Most of the time. And there are several sub, and this is subtle, tricky stuff. I can do overt self-seeking, which is me trying to get more money, or me trying to get a cooler car, or whatever. But you know, here's the underlying stuff. Why am I trying to get that stuff? So that other people will think he's cool, right?
Yeah.
Look at Ken. He's successful. I want to be like him. Right? Right? Okay. That's self-seeking. But here's some other fun stuff. Self-righteousness. This is Ken's big one. This is Ken's big struggle. Okay? Self-righteousness. And of course, many of you are good, close friends and know that I struggle with this one greatly. But look, if I'm right and you're wrong, I'm better than you. So you guys ought to hang out with me and not him because I'm right. He's wrong. When I'm saying he should, when I'm judging this guy, it's me being self-righteous. That's me trying to be better than everybody else. Look how cool I am. I have a big brain and he has a small one. So you should want to hang out with me because I'm cool. I'm smart like that. Okay, self-pity. Now this one's a little different. This is not about how much I advance myself as much as how I tear him down so that I look not as bad. You know, that guy who molested me, I've been going in over it in my head and getting how bad a person he is so that I'm not as bad. Right? Say, look what he did to me. Oh, and I even do it, you know, I don't even have to talk about it with somebody else. I can do it in my own head. Same with the self-righteousness. You know, I can tell CW here, okay, yeah, you go do that. And I'm thinking, yeah, when he fails, he'll come see me. I'm self-righteous again, you know? And guys, when I stay stuck in this self-pity thing, I'm playing the victim. I am the victim. I'm stuck in it. Right? I'm never going to get freedom from it if I'm going to continue to be that guy's victim. If I continue to wallow in this self-pity. I'm going along in it. Okay. Let's see. Fearful? Well, if I'm constantly thinking about the future and how to manipulate things and how to control things and what I should do in order to control the outcome, I'm stuck in fear. I'm being fearful. I'm not trusting God with that part of my life. Okay? Dishonesty. Wow, that's a big one.
Yeah. We add it to dishonest. As dishonest as we are with the rest of the world, we are 10 times more dishonest with ourselves.
Well, you know, the way that I'm dishonest with other people, there's 3 different kinds of lies. There's a kind of lie where I'm telling a lie. I'm saying something I know to be false. Okay? There's the kind where I'm telling a lie of omission. I'm leaving out critical pieces of information to my wife. Yeah, I just ran an errand to the store. I failed to mention I stopped off at the strip bar, right? Okay? There's the lie of compliance.
You know, that means that when I hear this guy telling a lie to you guys, he knows it's a lie, I know it's a lie, and I keep my mouth shut, I'm also lying. If I don't speak up and say, you know, that's not exactly the truth. If I don't speak up, I'm still telling a lie. Okay? There's also the lies I tell myself. Rationalization. I may have rationalization, justification mixed up. One is before the act and one is after the act. So if y'all correct me if I'm wrong. But rationalization is before? Yeah. Okay. It's when I justify to myself why it's okay for me to do this thing that I know is wrong. Okay? I give myself the excuse to go ahead and do it. Justification is after the fact. I did something wrong, and I'm saying, well, it was okay because it's a lie I tell myself. The end justifies the means is the core theme of both of them. We know that's wrong. Okay. Denial, of course. You know, I see something. I know what it is. I know that this is a flower. He knows this is a flower. You know this is a flower. And I say, no, that's not a flower. That's a denial. Okay? Delusion is a little bit different. It's when I start to believe. Go ahead.
Can you go back to denial a second and kind of clarify the difference between denial and dishonesty a little bit more?
Okay. I had one of our brothers said this once. He said, you know, if there's an elephant in my living room, which for many of us there was, and I say, no, there's not an elephant in my living room, but yet every time I walk through the living room, I walk around it, that's denial. Okay? But if I say there's not an elephant in the living room, yet every time I walk through the living room, I run into it, that's delusion. Okay? Does everybody understand that? Does that help? I don't know how else to describe it. A little bit. I wish I had a Webster right in front of me. Well, I do, but you know what? It takes too much time. Okay. Alright. That concludes us on the four-step stuff. Fifth step, you know, I usually do the fourth column with my protege in the fifth step. I usually tell my protege when we do inventory, just do the first three columns. When we get together, we'll do that fourth column together. Okay? And then we'll go through and we'll clarify all this stuff so that you can see the truth in it. You know, why do we do a fifth step? Well, that's the very reason. You know, Adrian's sponsor likes to say you cannot draw a straight line with a crooked ruler. We've admitted in step two that I'm nuts. I cannot give myself a reality check when I have problems with reality. Okay? I have to get an outside view. Okay? Does that make sense? And then, of course, it says on page 72, second paragraph, Adrian, would you go ahead and read that, the seventh sentence, the best reason, all the way through the end of the paragraph on page 73?
The best reason first. If we skip this final step, we may not overcome racism. Time after time, newcomers have tried to teach themselves certain facts about their lives, trying to avoid this humbling experience. They have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they acted out. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung out on some of those worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought that they had humbled themselves. But they have not learned enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all of their life story.
There you go. Okay. Now we're well on, guys. I got one thing I could do, but it's not necessary. The important thing is if you're doing this work, do this work. Just like we've talked about today, get with your sponsor between now and next week. Do a fifth step. And we will come back together then. But if you like, I got a quick thing I can do on inventory. Is there anyone who would like to not do that?
I make a suggestion. Why don't we go ahead and close? If anybody wants to stay after, I'll dig on that.
Okay. All right. Cool. Then let's.
do that real quick.
Closing. For page 164 AA Big Book, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose to more to you than to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But you obviously cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely what you find and join him. He shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless and keep you until then. This is the practice primary purpose group to offer desired chip to anyone want to start their journey. Anybody else need a desired chip? If you would like to become a member of our group, see Ken after the meeting. And our seventh tradition says each group ought to be self-supporting with their own contributions. This is your first meeting of SAA. We ask you to be our guest. We're glad you're here. We hope you come back and become a part of our lives. Announcements? Okay. That's that close. It's our traditional.
We can just form a circle right here, guys. Don't want to cut down the doors, right? So let's grab a hand. Join. They might want to join in.
Behind us.
To teach us them.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works when you work it, and it works like hell to be done.
Yay! I keep starting everyone coming.
Real quick, guys, this was an amazing thing to me. I was talking about this with Adrian one time. We were talking about the guy, I brought up the guy who molested me. It's no big deal. I found some incredible freedom over this. You know, I was sitting at Primary Purpose Group AA and was noticing that I noticed certain women there, and the thought occurred to me, if I were not in the solution, I know that I could have those women if I wanted them. And what made me notice that was the fact that there are certain things, weaknesses in them that make them vulnerable to my disease. What that told me was, I'm a predator. I'm a wolf. I'm looking at the weak members of the herd. I'm noticing them. I know which members of the herd can be taken down. Which ones are within my capabilities. Okay, I'm a predator. But suddenly it occurred to me, wait, the guy who molested me, he was a predator. What did he see in me that told him that he could get away with this from me? Ah, okay. Now I'm starting to see where I set the ball in motion. You know what? I didn't ask him to molest me. I had nothing to do with that. It happened. Okay, it's not my fault. But the fact is, I remember. I was always selfishly seeking attention as a kid. I was always trying to be the center of attention. And he's, you know, I can see the gears turning in this predator's head. Ah, he wants attention. I can give him attention. But he also probably fell to the ground out and noticed that I was incredibly self-conscious when it came to matters sexual. Incredibly self-conscious and worried about what other people think of me. So he knows not only can he show me the attention, he could probably get away with it because Ken is so worried about what other people think. So the thing was that it wasn't this guy molesting me that caused me to go act out with all these women to prove that I wasn't homosexual. It was my fear of being thought of as a homosexual that drove me to act out with all these women. It could have just as easily been some classmate in the locker room making some remark that set me on the same fear. It was the fear that drove me. It wasn't that God molesting me. And I've gotten some incredible freedom from that. Different people have different ways, but you know, that was the inventory, and it took many years of doing inventory over that one thing for me to get some freedom from that. So that's what inventory does for you. That's what it did for me. That's what it helped me with. But I just wanted to include that. So it's this is the forensic tool of the fellowship. This is the forensic tool of the program to give me freedom from these things that kept me in chains. And all from a discussion with Adrian. That's why it's important to have someone to talk about with this stuff and not do a self-appraisal.